to the children over time there. And I think a really important thing for you in the short time you've got is to take the opportunities to acknowledge that during the time when they're back in their seats doing some work. So, or even when you are sitting on the floor. So you can set the expectation, give the clear instruction. When you go back to your seat, you're going to go back silently. That's what she had obviously done prior to that. And then she just called each group as it goes. And you might just have, you know, I want you and you and you to go back to your seat. And if you lower your voice to a point where you're practically whispering, they then tend to do the same thing. Okay, they will move quietly. If you say, right, everyone back to their seats, let's go. They will go like that. And they'll be crashing and banging their chairs and they'll be on top of each other and the table will clang and pencils will go everywhere and you're suddenly, oh, God. Bring them back. Sit them on the floor. Make it quiet. So giving those explicit instructions. But being positive, I love the way that you just did that. Well done. You know, we tend in learning, once we move into the learning content, I'll talk to you about the feedback that you might give there. But that will be a different feedback to the feedback you're giving about behaviour. So you can say, great work, I love the way you just walked back to your seat so quietly, that kind of stuff. If you let them all go at once, I can nearly guarantee you, unless you have a beautiful group, which some of you would have, that will be chaos. It will be hard work for you if they all go back together. Because remembering, it's not their room. So they're not going to have those specific seats that he spoke about in the very beginning. In a very challenging group, as classroom teachers, we would have seats set. And most classrooms do have that. There aren't too many classrooms where the children choose who they sit next to because they choose the person who's not going to be good for them every single time. So we often have set structure. You don't have the privilege of that. And you also don't have the privilege most often of being able to say, everybody go back to your seat, because it's not their seat, it's not their classroom. So they're already jumbled up in all of that. So sometimes it is good to be specific about where you want them to go. In a challenging group, I would be. I'd be saying, Johnny, I want you to go and sit at the table on the left-hand side in the front seat. And guarantee you'll go, well, which one's the left side? Let me take you. Sit right there. And then you can kind of work from him and say, Sally, I want you to go and sit next to Johnny. Mary, I want you to sit opposite. And that kind of stuff. So if it's a really challenging group, be that specific. Because otherwise, it will be chaos. It will. And they will put it on for you perfectly because they know you don't know. And even if it was their classroom fully, lots of them will choose to swap seats when it's somebody that they don't know. So casual teaching, you remember that? You'd sit there and think there's no way the classroom teacher would have you two together, and they were together. And then one honest little girl would eventually put her hand up and say, they're not meant to sit together, and get away. I could tell already. So, you know, that kind of thing, that's difficult for you because it's a short time and not your own room that you establish right from the beginning. So again, important to try and get that movement, really, really important. But the positiveness is essential, even for the good kids. Because if you're a good kid all of the time and you never hear it, eventually you think, well, hang on a minute. Those three kids are getting the most attention out of everybody here. And it's the scripture teacher. So they're going to give them a lolly at the end or a card at Christmas time or something, you know, a red envelope when it's Buddha's birthday, whatever it might be that they get a prize in. And you still give it to everyone. Because that's what we do. We're giving people. We don't discriminate and say, you were naughty three times, you're getting nothing. even though the coin would probably be the most beneficial to that child. So, yeah, you know, like we just do that. But it's really important not to forget the good kids because suddenly those kids who are on the verge of being good or naughty will soon trek to the naughty side. They'll go with them because they're the ones getting the attention. They're the ones getting the teacher time. They're the ones that the teacher sits next to and helps them do their work. And kids love attention. It's that simple. We all do. None of us like to miss out. You know, like we all like to have that one person who says you're doing a great job or well done to you. So just remember positive reinforcement as a tool, a kit for you, for those good kids as well, that we don't leave them out and we don't forget that they're doing all the right stuff for us too. And for good kids, it can simply be, I love the way you're sitting, Vivian. Like they don't need the bells and whistles. Because they're just good kids. That's just, they want to be compliant. They don't wish to be those that rock the boat. So something, even though you might think, oh gosh, that's all I did, that's all they need. And reality is, I would love to have a school where I don't need to have any positive reinforcement, where kids just come to do the right thing because they come to do the right thing. Unfortunate, our society is probably moving further and further away from that than we ever were before. And I'm sure in some of the Asian countries that you might come from, kids just do as they're told. They just do. Like, they come to school and they behave and they listen because they know if they don't, it's not worth it. They just do. They want to learn. Unfortunately, in Australian culture, we don't have that same respect or that same level of, I don't know if it's respect or just that same expectation of our kids to have that sort of level as well. So it's challenging. Like I mentioned before, body language is very encouraging. And he spoke about it in one of the videos that he talked about before, where he said, if you stand like this at the front of the line when the kids arrive, they're going to be like, whoa, who's she? That'll be their first, especially the naughty kid. They'll go, wow, who's she? She thinks she's tough. Wait till I get her inside. So, you know, your body language matters. And we know ourselves, our body language matters with the people we interact with. And again, like I did before, just by walking over here, my body language indicates to this person that you no longer have power over me. I'm right beside you. And I'm taller. And I'm in your space, which is uncomfortable. No one likes anyone being in their space. I'm in your space. And if it's a really bad challenge, I actually get that close that I can sometimes touch. I can nearly be touching. And suddenly that child's just like, whoa, you know, whooshka, she's nearly on top of me. And that's even more, isn't it? It's confronting, incredibly confronting to have someone that close. So your body language tells a lot about who you are as a person, and it also tells the kids right from the start, because before you open your mouth, they see you. Okay? So if you are looking shy and timid, they will go, yay. Thank you very much. My day is going to be good today. This person's not going to control me. If you are looking angry and aggressive, that's exactly how they will take it. And sometimes I say to my staff, you know, they'll come in and they'll have had a bad morning. We're adults, we have bad mornings. Life's not always beautiful. You might have a bad day, a bad week, a bad month. Who knows? But when I say to my staff, when you enter that room, you leave all of that behind, because they will know and they will act on it. Whether it's good or bad, they will act on it. And a teacher, most often, if they get a chance to reflect at the end of their day, if they've had a bad day from the start, so have the kids. Guaranteed, it's been a shocker of a day. So if you enter the scripture room having had a bad morning, or, you know, a discussion with the principal who's not as nice as me, now you might have entered in a bad way, that you will take that energy with you. And I think, you know, Buddhism's all about that. Get rid of that negative energy, bring the positive, and people will respond to you differently. So really important that you make sure that what they see first is what you expect of them first. So we are the models all the time. Our teachers, or my teachers, will often say, God, it's like a performance every single day. You bet it is. It is like a performance every single day. You are dramatic, you are excited, you love every subject on the planet, and never is there something that you're teaching that you don't wish for them to learn. So it is a big job being a teacher, and, you know, we do get paid for ours, so we get rewarded. You don't. So your pleasure comes from just feeling the goodness of leaving the room. So you don't ever want to leave sitting there thinking, wow, and it's only 7 days till I come back. You don't want to have that. Yes.
Thank you. Listen, another thing also, it's very important that we appear positive.
Yeah.
They're so
clever, aren't they? Yeah. They know. And I mean, you know, I've done it a million times in my career where I've had a bad morning with my own children or whatever, and I get to school like, rah, I just want to, you know, do something to someone and yell at somebody and make me feel better. Mm-hmm. And if I go to a room like that, that is my day. That is my whole day. And I've deserved it from the start, but it's really hard. Like, sometimes it's hard to wipe that emotion and go, today I'm here to be positive because I love it and it's all fantastic and you're wonderful and woohoo to us. Like, you do just want to sit in there and go, just get your work done. Just do it. Why are you finding this so hard? And, you know, on a nice level as well, kids respond to you when they know that you're not having a good day too. Those good kids will pick up immediately on that. When I lost my husband 11 years ago now, And I went straight back to work. So I had a few weeks off and I was teaching, full-time teaching on a class then. And I went straight back after 2 weeks of having the holidays, straight back to work full-time. And everyone's sort of going to me, oh, you know, are you sure you want to do this? No, not really. But here I am and I've got to keep going. So I walked into my room and in my classroom I had two autistic children, highly autistic, who probably should have been in a placement, but they weren't. They were in my room. And I had a child in a wheelchair with cerebral palsy. Okay, so it was huge. Like I'd only been there 6 months, and this was the first class I'd had in that particular school. So it was a massive group, and then on top of that, another 28 U1 kids. Yeah. So walked into the room on the first day, and those three kids, my two autistic kids and my boy in the wheelchair, came up to me and in their best possible language said, "Don't leave us again." And I just looked at them, cried, of course. You know, I still cry today, years and years later. But, you know, that started my time back at school. You know, had I entered and the kids all been, you know, ooh, we know what's happened or whatever, or their parents had told them, whatever might have happened, it would have been a difficult transition for me. One of the autistic boys who hated touch, he hated anybody touching him. And anyone who has any idea about autism, they either love it or they hate it. There's no grey area for those kids. A brush past them can drive them crazy. Oh. This particular boy was a non-touch. Do not touch me, do not brush past me. He just exploded in the middle of the classroom if two kids had bumped him on their way past by accident. And next minute he'd go, rah! You go, whoa. Okay, come and sit over here, you know. He would come up to me on the days that he could sense me coming in a bad way. And believe me, there were lots of bad days where I'd be dragged out of bed by my girls going, "Come on, Mum, we have to go to school." I'd walk into that room and he'd come up to me and he'd say, "I need a hug." Aww. And so they are amazing at picking up on who we are and what we display to them. Mm-hmm. So that kid hated being touched. His mother used to be blown away. She'd be like, "You get more hugs than I do." You know, like he won't hug me at home because he doesn't like touch, but he'll do it to you. And he only ever did it on the days that I needed it most. So they are so perceptive. And I think because they have less barriers than we do as adults, they just do it. They don't care. They'll show you the good, the bad, and the ugly. They don't mind. Whereas for us and like the teaching staff, they'd kind of be looking at me going, "Oh, she's had a bad morning. Let's stay away. Like, don't talk to her today. I can tell she's cried all the way in the car." You know, that sort of stuff. So as adults, we become more afraid to do that outward emotion because we're not sure of what we do. Kids, man, they just do it. They don't care. Like it or lump it, you're going to cop it. So body language from the beginning, as soon as they see you, is essential that you set that scene for them and you let them know what you expect.
Not at all. In the video, it showed the teacher actually put her arm around and touched the student.
I meant to say something about that.
And also, too, you were saying there about touching.
Yeah.
What are the rules there?
The boundaries are pretty good for you guys, unfortunately. The reality is we're not meant to touch kids.
Yeah.
The end. Not meant to touch them.
You just put your hand on
you
back.
You do.
Yes, and they act up a bit. Once you've developed a relationship with them, it becomes very different. And I think for little kids, if a child falls over at school, I'm not going to leave them there. I'm going to get up and I'm going to hug them. I'm going to sit there and I'll have my arm around them and I will say, "It's okay, sweetheart, we're getting a Band-Aid. It's all fine." If I go to court for that and someone sues me, take me down. I'm okay with it. For you, it's a little more difficult because you're only there for such a short amount of time. So I probably would, if I was you, avoid it. I would avoid the touch. You'll know the kids probably even by now, after term one, that you could do that too. And those that do that, that you just think, most often if they do that, it's because they don't trust you yet. Kids take a long time to trust sometimes. They're quite perceptive of things like that. Or they've had trauma of their own, that sort of thing just scares them. It's like, "Oh my God, is it a whack on my back? Or is she actually being nice to me?" I'd avoid the touch if I had to, if I was you, definitely. I've never had a situation of an SRE teacher being accused of anything like that. But unfortunately in today's world, who knows what could come. And, you know, where in previous years you know, it wouldn't have mattered. Politically correct these days, we have to be careful. So, yeah, I'd probably avoid it if I could. Okay, this one descriptive encouraging. You would have noticed when the teacher, once the kids were back in their seats, the first part of that particular video, she was going around and saying, I really like the way that you finished that, or good job so-and-so for working hard on that. Our job never gets to a point where we get to sit. Okay, we rarely sit in a classroom. The only time we sit is when the kids are, so that we're at eye level with them and we don't show that amount of power that I've been showing here. So if we sit, we become equal to them, or we get less power, I guess. We still tend to sit above them a little bit, but not so much. The really important thing to do when they are being good is to reinforce that behaviour and keep doing it once they move back to their seats. So quite often once they go back to do an activity, that used to be the time where teachers would go, oh, thank God, now I can sit and mark some work at my desk or something. As soon as you do, they'll go crazy. You'll start to lose them. If you wander, just like I was here, but not so intrusively, if you just wander up and down throughout, checking out what they're doing, guaranteed you will keep them on task. And you'll also find that kid who has no idea of the instruction because they weren't listening, and you'll be able to reinforce that instruction just to that one child. Or if you notice that a few of them are just sitting there like, I don't have a clue what you're asking, you can actually say, oh, can you tell us what we have to do today? Let's just reinforce what we have to do. Tell me one more time what we have to do to the one child who you know has already started. So that way they're going to hear it from a peer, not just from you, and not have to remember what it was that you asked them to say before anyway. Okay? So yeah, just be encouraging of the things that you want them to do and the things that you want to see more frequently. And just keep on top of that. By the end of the half hour, you'll be exhausted, going, gosh, if I'm any nicer, I'll probably end up, you know, sitting at the top of the temple. But unfortunately, it is that job. If you want the positiveness, you need to seek it, and you need to show that you're acknowledging and appreciative of those kids who are doing the right thing. Now, I did mention earlier, naughty kids want attention. Most often, if we do a thorough analysis of why kids are naughty, it's most often because they just want your attention. And they don't care how they get it. Because they don't often get positive reinforcement. And if they do, they don't really care about it. So we have some kids where it's really, really difficult to just get that one reward for them. You think, if I can just get you to do the right thing from 9 o'clock till 11 o'clock, and then at the end of that time, you pick the reward that you want. And one day they'll say, I want 10 minutes of Lego. Okay? 10 minutes of Lego is great. Let's do that for you. The next day, you give them the 10 minutes of Lego, and they throw them at each other. So you kind of like, I can't find that one thing that triggers this kid. They are out there. They're those kids who daily you would need to find a new reward for, because they are just challenging and all they want is your time. We found the most successful strategy for us at the moment for our challenging kids, we don't have very many, which is lovely, but for our challenging kids is to give them the time. So for our really, really, we've got two difficult children at the moment, one in year four and one in kindergarten, interestingly enough, start them early. The one in year four, he just wants someone to listen to him. So three or four times throughout the day, he has picked somebody to be his mentor, and that person sits with him three or four times during the day. At the very start of the day, they have a chat about, how was your morning? Did you have breakfast? How are you feeling about today? What's the goal you want to get before lunchtime? All those kinds of things, 1 minute worth, and then off to class the child goes. At lunchtime, before they go out to play, they sit again with the mentor and go through, how'd you feel about the morning session? What happened? Did you get your work done? Who are you going to play with today? Did you eat some lunch? All those basic things. Do it again before they go back to class again. So we do it numerous times throughout the day, because what we find with this boy is he wants adult attention, and he's going to get it no matter how. So if we give it positively and we're proactive, we give the attention before the behaviour happens, then quite often it does settle him down for the day. Not always perfect, but most often it settles him down. So with those kids, like the guy was saying in the very first video of lining them up outside, with those kids, take the time to be that positive reinforcement to them before they even get inside. So you know them, you've got that kid in your head right now where you're thinking, oh yeah, that's the one. When they're lining up outside, if you can get to that activity before they even enter, walk up to that one. That's the one you give the attention to before you even come in. The others will be quite happy just to stand there and chatter amongst themselves and wait for everybody else to arrive. That one child who you know caused you lots of grief last week, talk to them. How's your day been? What did you do this morning in class? Simple things like that. Who'd you play with at lunchtime? How was your weekend? Little questions, if you get to know them well enough, and you probably will because they'll be in your face all the time, you'll know the thing that they like to do, like it might be footy. Did you play footy on the weekend? What did you do? How did you go? Did your team win? That kind of stuff, because then you've done the attention that they're going to seek as soon as they come inside. You've already addressed it. You've given them an opportunity to say and make a connection just with you and them. So really important to attend to the behaviour positively before you have to react to it negatively. Okay, so we're trying really hard to be proactive here, not reactive once it already happens. The other really important thing, and that's why we have the three steps of our behaviour management in our classrooms, where we give the non-verbal, then we do the movement thing or the, you know, I love the way that you're sitting, Vivian, whatever it might be. We do that because we don't want to instantly go into stop doing, stop touching, stop looking, stop rolling, stop moving. We don't want them to do that because as soon as we say don't, they say thank you. Because that means I can now do it even more because she's noticed. And if I do it bigger, she'll notice more. So it's really important to do those few steps first and then address. So what they're saying here is, keep them close to you, know what they're doing, keep them in your peripheral vision, so you don't want to eye contact them the whole time unless you actually do want to. I'm good at that. I tend to eye contact someone for quite a while and then suddenly they'll be like, ooh, she means business, let me listen. But if you know, just keep them there. Keep them so that you know what they're doing so they don't hurt themselves or hurt others along the way, because ultimately we want them to be safe in that half hour slot you've got. Keep them close, but keep reinforcing the stuff that you want for a little bit. Give them an opportunity to get it right. Then if they don't, address. Because if you address every tiny little behaviour that's negative, that's not unsafe at the time, or it might not be causing you any grief, I can guarantee you by the end you're going to be exhausted. Because there will always be that child who looks away. There will always be the one who you know is not attaining to what you're saying. If you try to address everything, you'll go crazy. So don't address the little ones, just keep reinforcing the good stuff that's happening around them in the hope that they might just get it rubbed off and they might start to act it the right way. No, yes,
so
definitely.
Usually when we are in the classroom, we have two teachers.
Okay.
Because we have pretty much a big class.
Oh,
the
I bet
children
you do. Oh, wow, okay.
So one teacher is delivering the class, but we have assistant teacher.
Perfect.
So if you find that there are not two students somewhere, so what I think mostly we expecting the assistant teacher to have to do something.
Yes.
So can you give any tips how...
They can be the person who does the movement stuff or the sitting right next to. Like, rather than just watch it over the back, go and sit in there. Like, as soon as you become part of, they suddenly lose their power again because you're that close now. If you've got an assistant, that's wonderful and you deserve one, believe me. But I think it's important to have that person monitoring all that so you don't have to stop. How lovely. You might get through the whole lesson if you don't have to keep stopping and addressing the negative behaviours that might be happening at the time. So I would definitely have them take on all of these strategies. Yeah, the go and sit next to, the just walk past. Don't even have to be right there. It can be as simple as being, like even this vicinity right now, I know none of you would be naughty. Right? Because you're right here. You're right here and very close, and you're probably good too, yeah. Those people always sit right at the front. Whereas me, who sits at the back all the time in everything I do, they're the ones you've got to watch, those ones at the back, you know, because you just never know how off task they might be or how they might just flick their phone out under the table and check their messages. I don't mind you. Do what you have to do. But, yeah, I think sometimes if they sit towards the back, fish bowling, we call it fish bowling, where you actually look from the outside, is amazing what you can see. We sometimes use that as one of our strategies. If we've got a class that's incredibly unsettled, we'll actually have someone go in to fishbowl. So they actually sit like they're on the outside of the tank and everyone else is on the inside and they just make notes. It's incredible what we miss. Absolutely incredible what we miss from being at the front and being so focused on the learning part, the teaching and the learning bit, that we miss what happens out there as well. So if you've got someone doing that, that would be their job for me, especially on a difficult group. If you've got an easy group, they can, you know, just, you know, join in. But on those more difficult, challenging ones, yeah, I'd have them right there. They would be doing all those micromanaging little bits.
So if the child, I mean, for the kindy to year two,
yes.
So sometimes they will ask you, they want attention.
Yep.
They would like you to fix his hair.
Yep.
Sometimes they will ask you to tie his hair.
Yep.
Sometimes they say, oh, I need to go to the toilet.
Always.
So, and then for the teacher, it's very difficult to take care of a particular one child.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely. And again, direct them to your assistant if you can, if you're lucky enough to have one. But, you know, most often, I've had that my whole career as well. You know, my elastic's come off my plait or whatever, and my plait's come undone. But if you don't fix it, oh my gosh, you'll suddenly have three other kids trying to fix it.
Yeah.
And then you'll have, you know, and the plait will be fully undone now, so the kid's flicking their hair, going, you know, whoosh, it's in my face, now it's apart. Then it hits somebody and someone yells because it's hit them. And, yeah, sometimes it's easy to fix those things. Like, just do it. Without speaking, like if you just keep talking and keep doing and you're plaiting and you're putting an elastic on the end and you just say, you know, there you go, done. Sometimes those little ones are worth just doing, just fixing up before it becomes a big issue. Other times I would have said things, like if I was right in the middle of, you know, setting up a, like if you were doing your whole class discussion or something like that, you might be able to do it. But if you're actually giving a lot of instruction or reading a book or whatever, I would just put my hand up and just say stop and just sit and just wait there. Because, you know, you can guarantee if you do send them back, it will involve 20 other kids. Whereas if they sit right near you without going anywhere, stay beside me and wait, when you're done and the kids do go back to do an activity, you might have time to replait the hair and put the elastic on, whatever it might be.
Is there any rules? If one child, kindy student, if he won't go to the toilet, he said we need to have someone accompany him.
Yes.
So his friends or is the teacher?
No, friend. Send a friend.
Yeah.
Just a friend, yeah. And try not to make it a friend who you know is going to have fun.
So the teacher doesn't need to go?
No.
Yeah.
Teacher definitely doesn't need to go.
The other kid in the room without teacher.
Because your assistant. You could send the assistant. Yeah, I wouldn't send the assistant. I would probably send another child. Just because child protection issues. Again, I mean, the kid only waits outside most often, outside the toilet, swings around the pole a bit, plays in the garden, whatever, while they wait for their friend. But, yeah, I would just send a child and just pick the right child to go. Don't let them pick. You pick. You take him to the toilet. Yeah, because otherwise it will take a very long time and you won't see them until 29 minutes past 10 and you'll go, holy dooly, I forgot you were even there. I've been so busy doing my stuff. Yeah, so basically what this bit here is saying, this little micro story is saying, only attend to the things that you know are going to cause you bigger issues if you don't. Okay, and you'll get better at that. You will get much better at that, and you'll know the ones that you need to and don't need to. Tactical ignoring is another skill that you develop over time, because quite often when we are teaching a class, all we want is for them to listen. Like, we're not expecting them to do acrobats. We don't need backflips or anything like that. We just want you to listen, and it'll only be quick. We're not going to talk for an hour and a half like I am. We're not going to spend that much time making you listen. We're actually going to do this quickly. And the quicker we get it done, the quicker you get to go and do your own activity and you don't have me preaching to you the whole time. So tactically ignoring kids is sometimes difficult because it grinds on you. It's driving you crazy. Like, you can see that kid who keeps rolling under the table or that one who just moves a bit. Then 10 minutes later, they move a little bit further. And then suddenly now they're next to the kid who they know is going to cause them grief, so they move just that little bit further. And you're thinking, I know what you're doing. I can see you moving, and I want to say, get away from him! But you know you can't, because if you do, it stops your flow of your teaching. So you wait and you wait and you wait. But it's tactical, because you know they're doing it. You've watched them out of the peripheral vision of your eye or whatever. You know it's happening. And then suddenly, you can just walk straight in the middle and stand in between. Mm. And suddenly that kid will be doing that, whoa, yeah. He can stay in trouble. Mm. I ain't staying here, I'm out. And they'll move away. So being able to find those moments and do those things becomes better the more assertive you become. So even if it mightn't be in your personality to be like that, sometimes you just got to find it deep within to be able to do it. Because you are the one who is, you're responsible in that half hour for their safety. And if things get out of hand, where that child gets that close, that suddenly they, you know, someone pinches or flicks or kicks, because you can guarantee that kid wasn't moving for no reason. They wanted to do something, either to annoy you or to annoy the kid they're moving to. So really important to keep it safe. So sometimes you've just got to step outside your comfort zone and do something that might be unusual for you to do. So if you are a quieter person who tends to respond to things in a much more quieter way, unlike me, then you might be the sort of person who, if you did just stand up, that might be enough for them to go, whoa, she doesn't usually stand up like that. She means business, you know, just by standing up. Whereas for me, it would mean I would have to move. I would have to go and stand in between or just do that. So again, it hasn't interrupted, hasn't taken out your flow. It's just made them know that you know. That you know you're not ignoring it and you're not going to let it go. You know they're doing it, but it's not worthy of me saying anything because I know you're doing it on purpose. It's the one that moves under the table. By themselves completely, more than happy just to do it themselves. But by the end, in that last 2 minutes of being under the table, that's when they start knocking their head back. So it hits the table. So suddenly they've gone, well, I've moved, you didn't notice, you don't care, so now I'm going to make noise. So now you do care and you do notice and you will say something. So it's those sorts of kids. They're not so abrupt and they don't just rah in the middle. They just slowly but surely do it to drive you crazy or to drive someone else crazy.
So what do you do if they're under the table?
Get them out. Yeah, I'd be dragging that. No. Look, I think sometimes it's good to set a boundary where you just go, you know, look, and kids are great at it, adults are great at it. You know, I notice in my staff meetings, if I do it in a place, if I'm in the library where there's bookshelves, I can guarantee one of my staff will find a way to be back inside that bookshelf so that they're just in my vision, so that it looks like they're watching me, but I can't really see what they're doing on their phone beside them. So, you know, that kind of stuff, we do it. We do it as adults, we do it as kids. But under tables is unsafe. It's that simple. So if you start to have those kids who do that, most often it's about space and proximity. Most classrooms, and I am generalising a lot here, they would most often have a space on the floor that they use. Mm. Some would be specific enough to have it taped out. Mm. We've done that. I've done that in my past. If I've had really difficult kids where you don't sit outside the taped area, that kind of stuff. But a really important thing to set up from the very start, move forward. Everyone come forward. So at least it's going to take them some time to get under the table. If they start leaning on the table, you can guarantee in 5 minutes they'll be under it. Absolutely guarantee. And it is just a matter then of saying, get out from under the table. Mm. You're not going to learn anything there. Move out. There's no one else doing it, so you can't even reinforce the goodness. You could probably start by saying, I love the way you're using your five L's, and sitting up nicely and paying attention and listening. Yoo-hoo, under there. But, you know, if they've already made it under there, they're quite happy. And sadly for some kids, that's kind of a bit of protection as well, if they're feeling like they're a little bit awkward in a group. And again, because you're having kids from all different classes at the same time, if they're feeling a little bit threatened by another kid in the class who had a fight with their brother or sister the other day or whatever, they might just do that for safety for themselves. They're the kids I would most often get out from under the table, come and sit next to me. So you might not have the security of the table, but you've now got the security of me. I'm right here. Nothing can happen to you while you're at my feet. Oh, isn't she? There's a video for that one. It's time to have a listen to someone else.